This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It's an honor to welcome back to the program John Whitehead, the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. How are you, sir?
Just fine.
It's good to see you. I'm good. I'm very good. Hey, I was talking to you the other night, and this was something I didn't know that I just wanted to share with people. I didn't know you were a painter. And that you actually may have a show coming up, and that you've been painting for years. I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's very cool, John.
It's fun. I'm not a very good painter, but it's fun.
Who cares? Who cares? And I'm sure you are very good. I actually haven't seen your work, but what's your chosen medium for all the experts out there?
I just do whatever comes natural. I do a few landscapes. I do portraits.
And you use oils? Or?
Yeah, and I use... baby parts, sometimes some little
doll parts.
Yeah, some painting. Some are in the office, and we're just assembled a portfolio. But I've been in the McGuffey Museum,
yeah,
a couple times with paintings,
wow.
And Thomas Jefferson Center did a kind of a showing about 7 or 8 years ago of all 10 or 12 of my paintings.
That's so great! Wow. Well, I continue to be impressed. Where should we start? With the Buddy Poppies? Is that a good place to start?
Yeah.
Why don't we start with that? Because it's a nice local angle. And, of course, this we want to encourage folks to check out your website. It's rutherford.org. And you post all of your commentaries there.
Yep.
And these commentaries, for those who don't know, are published in newspapers around the country every week. And you make them available on your website as well.
Yeah, we filed a lawsuit about a week and a half ago on behalf of Big John Mishka out of Rutherfordville. He's a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, works for a VFW post there, and well known for his free speech activities, handing out his buddy poppies. If you know what buddy poppies are, they're little red flowers, and they have a little strip of paper, and they say, support the troops, and... Big John hands them out in different parts of the country and carries a bucket where people can give money. He's been going up to Washington, D.C. quite a bit and handing out the poppies on the National Mall. And, I'd say for the last 6-7 months, he's really been harassed by the park police saying that he can't accept donations. And there's a law there that says you can't aggressively solicit for funds on the mall. He doesn't do that. In other words, if people want to give. But, this man has a history.
That's to ward off panhandlers, I guess.
I guess, yeah. But and he's been ticketed for this, and we helped him in that court proceeding, and he was, it was basically a no contest. He walked out. He didn't receive a fine or anything. So we decided to file a First Amendment lawsuit. The thing about Big John, though, which is pretty neat, is that everything he does basically is hand-to-mouth. And he raises money, and the buddy poppies are assembled by disabled veterans, basically, and any donations go back to the veterans to help their families.
Is there a long history to those poppies?
There's a long history. It goes
they've been
way
doing
back
that for years.
Into the 20s. Yeah,
the
red is the blood of fallen soldiers, and
right.
It's basically a symbol of people who have fought for this country. Big John himself is a Vietnam vet who spent time recuperating in Walter Reed Hospital.
He raises money
for the vets. The point is, and it's many presidents have been guilty of this, George Bush included, is just not taking care of the veterans coming back. Nearly 200,000 veterans are homeless on any given night in America. Most people don't know
that. Wow.
200,000. Large homeless population, and many of these are recent from Gulf War on up through the Iraq War and soldiers who have fought in Afghanistan. They don't get reemployment when they come back. They have trouble finding jobs. The government's not helping them. 1.8 million veterans were unable to get care in VA hospitals in 2004. That's the last statistics we have. We don't take care of our veterans. So here you have a man out, handing out buddy poppy, saying, we need to help our veterans. And if people want to give, he takes the money and goes directly to the VFW. He spoke to my interns last summer. I tried to give him $200. Just to help him out, because he does live hand to mouth, and he handed me the check back and said, write it to the VFW. He wouldn't take the money. So this man's legit. He's out there doing something that we all should be doing, and the United States government's harassing him. So we filed a First Amendment lawsuit, and we're going to see how that goes. But I mean, I just it, I feel ashamed that we would ask people to go die in foreign countries, get injured, post-traumatic, you know, all the things that happen to them when they come back. They're homeless. They have problems. I have widows who email me, and we'll try to follow up with the VA who won't help their husbands when they come back from Iraq. I mean, they can't get help. So the Bush administration, really, because he's been the most war hawk president we've had in a long time, I mean, they've been terrible. I mean, care at Walter Reed, there's been a couple scandals at the Walter Reed Hospital.
Yeah.
Big John goes up there, I think, twice a week, tries to do help the men in there. He does a buffet and a Christmas party for him. He's doing a Christmas party for him, I think, next week.
Yeah.
So this is a guy who puts it out there. And then he goes up on the mall and tries to raise awareness. And help
the vets, and his government says, go home.
Yeah, basically, yeah, we're going to arrest you. Yeah, they've gotten quite aggressive. I mean, they've yelled at him, pushed him around, ticketed him. So now it's time for them to back off. We'll fight it. So I think it's just one of those issues that this time of year, you know, when we talk about Christmas, I mean, a lot of these guys have children. I mean, what's going to be under the Christmas tree this year? I mean, their wives are struggling. The economy's horrible.
You know what I heard, John, recently? The number of suicides among veterans is like the highest in history. And it's going underreported, and in many cases not even reported at all. Most people aren't even aware of this. The number of soldiers who are returning from Iraq and Afghanistan and killing themselves is really, really frighteningly
really,
high.
Really, really frighteningly high. Yeah. We're not taking care of them, either when they're in the war zone or when they get back to the United States. So there's a lot of things we can do, obviously, but support the VFW. I mean, what a great organization. People like Big John Mishka. And we're just going to keep the governments off their back so they can raise a little money. And I don't know what else you can do, but just think about that. On any given night, 200,000 veterans are homeless, and these are recent war veterans out on the streets.
And you would think that this wouldn't be a political issue. And it's so sad that everything now these days has become a political issue. And of course, John McCain famously stood out against Jim Webb's GI Bill, which blew my mind. I mean, that was one of the biggest surprises to me. Was, oh my gosh, you're making this political? You of all people? But he did, and the Republicans in general stood against this. Against the new GI Bill.
And it's not going to get better because, you know, we may talk about it in a minute. You know, we have a global warring empire now, and you're going to have I've been told by a couple veterans that many of the injuries coming back from war now are injuries that would have killed the soldiers before because of the flak jacket and stuff. The injuries are just severe enough to incapacitate them.
And disable them
And
severely.
Disable them, yeah, mentally and physically. So if there's anything that we need to focus on now, it's those type of things. But again, we're in this particular case, and I just think it's outrageous. I think I'm ashamed that our government would harass somebody.
It's amazing that a veteran can't stand up and go to his nation's capital,
a Vietnam vet,
and hold
wounded.
Out a bucket and say, "Please help the veterans."
He didn't say that. He just has the bucket. He doesn't ask them. They can put money in. Most people do, obviously. You know, people are familiar with the Buddy Poppy and what the VFW does. So it's a great organization. Support them, and anybody that's getting harassed that's out there, a veteran, we'll be glad to help.
We're talking with John Whitehead, the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute. You can learn a whole lot online at an amazing website, rutherford.org. When we get back, let's talk about the magic of Christmas and John Lennon, shall we?
Sure.
And President Bush. This is Charlottesville Right Now, a break right now for local news and a weather update. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're talking with John Whitehead, the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. You're still looking into this, but tell us, I know that some autism cases have come across your desk and your staff is looking into these items, and we need to let people know these aren't, at this point, cases that the Rutherford Institute has gotten involved in, but it's come across it's on
cases
your radar.
Cases we're investigating. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. What are you investigating?
Two that we are looking at. One is a case in Florida where allegedly an autistic child was tied to a desk, numerous bruises during the day, didn't tell the parents.
In a public school.
The other one is just recently in North Carolina, a mother's alleging that the son was put on a leash by a teacher in the classroom and sat down on the seat. I think a lot of it just grows out of ignorance. They really don't know what to do. They're not trained properly, the teachers. No one would do that,
yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
So we're just looking into those kind of cases.
Yeah.
And whether there's damages there, then we have to find a local lawyer who will work on it. And those are all things up in the air. But I think there's enough there where there's a little smoke, you know.
Yeah.
There's got to be
yeah.
a spark. I think that people just don't know how to handle it. You do, but most people don't in a public school. The thing is, they're not telling the parents. The parents are finding out from other people. They're not going to the parents saying, hey, can I tie your child down to a seat, which the parent obviously is going to say, no, you can't
right.
do that. But
yeah.
the teachers are trying to have order in the classroom. So we're looking into that. I think it's a dangerous trend. So
yeah.
I think that the schools obviously need some continuing education programs for the society that we're facing right now is a very difficult one. And there are different types of kids in the schools. They don't know how to handle them.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But, you know, it's something that if a parent is that aggrieved, I mean, tying a child to a desk where the child later comes home with bruises, and that's how the mother found out about that case.
My God.
Or someone saying, hey, they're putting a leash around your child's neck, which is really humiliating and dehumanizing, a form of slavery,
yeah.
which shouldn't occur. So we're looking into those cases.
I totally agree with you. I think the teachers need a lot more education. And I can tell you, as the father of a child diagnosed with autism, I would love nothing more than to be able to stand in front of a bunch of teachers and say, this is what it's like. This is what you need to know. But
it'd be good for the other children as well.
We're never given that opportunity.
But yeah. the thing is, one dangerous thing, and why schools need to be brought under a lawsuit possibly or threat of lawsuit for these kind of things is because of what the other children see happening. They see this, and it should not be an example for them
yeah.
to do. I mean, what kids learn what they see in school.
Yeah,
when
they're learning this is how you treat people with special needs.
Exactly.
You tie them to a chair.
And they cannot be taught that, yeah.
We're talking with John Whitehead, the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute. What are your thoughts on the Obama presidency? We really haven't talked about that in depth too much. And vis-a-vis, really, not politics, but public policy. What is it you think should be the priorities, and what would you like to see happen in that first year?
Well, I think, first of all, the problems we have are right inside the United States. I think, of course, he has to focus on that. He's assembling, I think, as far as the economic meltdown. He's, you know, Paul Volcker, good choice, I think. People like Robert Reich. So I think he's assembling a team that hopefully will be able to handle that. I don't think, as some economists tell me, that most people don't know what to do. Then they say that Obama doesn't know exactly what to do, but he's hiring the people with the minds to do that. I think that's the first thing. I think he needs to look at the elephantine federal bureaucracy and the global military empire we built up, which is sucking the country dry. I think he needs to look carefully at that. I think that...
And that's a lesson, John, of every great empire in the past, that it gets so expensive to maintain your empire.
We're going bankrupt, yes.
And they bankrupt themselves trying to keep this empire afloat in this huge worldwide military.
And I think he needs to avoid the pitfalls of the Clinton administration and the Bush administration in terms of some of the domestic issues they got involved in. I know some of your listeners will probably disagree. I think that divisive social issues such as abortion, gay marriage, and those things, the president should steer clear of those. And why I say that is I think he needs to be a moral and spiritual leader for all the people. If he gets off into those areas, his administration, like Bush got off into that, and so did Clinton, you're going to have a huge section of America you're going to automatically alienate. I think this president needs to be one who steers the center, unifies us. Okay, I think that's really important domestically. I think the other thing, and I always said this, and Bush was very, very poor at it, we need a leader now. The leader of the free world is the president of the United States. He needs to be someone who will go out into the world and bring America's image back, because our image overseas, outside this country, is awful. People see us as a warring empire bent on destruction. People are afraid we're going to bomb them or send helicopters into their countries and conduct raids on villages. I think all that needs to end. And I think there, the cue that should he should take, and I'm writing on this pretty soon, is from Dwight Eisenhower. People forget that Eisenhower, who was the great general who came into presidency in 1952, he was a man of peace. He was a diplomat. He got countries together. He refused to go into Vietnam. He didn't want to get into that mess. In the middle of the Cold War, he tried to make peace with the Soviet Union. He invited Nikita Khrushchev, people forget, to the United States. If you remember Nikita Khrushchev, he was caustic. He was the one that jumped up in the United Nations and banged his
shoe on the table. Yeah,
yeah, he was like a crazy man. Eisenhower actually brought him to the United States, and they signed a peace accord. Then he took that famous, and this is a great historical thing, he took a famous world trip where he went around the world. And if you've ever seen any of the footage of this, there's been a documentary on it. People from the Philippines to Germany to Japan, wherever he went, all over the world, rolled out the red carpet for him. They threw flowers in front of him. He was seen as a great moral and spiritual leader. He went to India, and they compared him to Mahatma Gandhi.
Eisenhower.
Yes. This is that's an amazing thing. Yeah. That's what we need. And I think if we're worried about the economy, the economic problem is a worldwide economic problem. He can do so much to mend the world, our economy here, what we face, if he becomes a man of peace and brings this world together. And that's exactly what we need right now. The other thing he did, and I thought was so neat, when he went out of office in his farewell address, he's the one that gave that great speech against the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
This is a former World War II general, who led the Allied forces. He gave that great speech. You should read it, where he talks about, if you haven't ever read it, and I know quite a few people, I'm surprised that have not, but he warned that we were going to be subsumed by a military-industrial complex that would completely drain the country economically and do away with our freedoms. And he said, don't let, you know, only an aware citizenry will stop that. We haven't listened to him. So on his way out of office, he was saying, this is not good, folks. This is a bad thing that's developed here. It's an armaments industry, and they make money off of war. And you need to fight it.
You know?
He knew we had to have a good defense.
Jefferson himself pointed out that if you look at human history, the great republics of the past, one of the threats to freedom of the great republics of the past have been those who profit from war and military interests. Always at the door wanting to take over your government because they profit from the suppression of liberty.
And I wonder now, because Obama's backed off somewhat on his fact he's going to pull all the troops out of Iraq, someone that I know recently said, well, the military-industrial those in charge of the military empire dictate the presidents. They really do. I hope he doesn't listen any further to them. But I think that he has a great opportunity, and the opportunity is, you know, to be a man of peace and bring the world together, because we are – I mean, our image abroad is awful. I mean, people hate the United States. Remember, people forget when 9/11 happened, people held parties and cheered in different countries.
Oh, yeah. Even in Iran, they took to the streets with candles.
They loved it. Yeah, and that wasn't just Iran. In Greece and countries like that. Yeah. I mean, Greece should love the United States. We should be seen as a great freedom-loving country, and it doesn't come from spreading freedom through war. It doesn't. Those things don't work, as we see. Bush has not succeeded in that area. So I think there's a lot of things he can do, but he should be a world leader. Bring people together, and bring people together in the United States. If he doesn't do that, I think his presidency will be in trouble. He will alienate a lot of people in this country. Stay away from divisive issues that can be solved on the state level. I mean, if California wants to do something or Virginia, let them do it. But he should bring people together, because that's what we need right now. We need a leader.
John Whitehead is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. John, you wrote recently about Christmas at this holiday time of year. Tell us what that commentary was about.
Well, it was this time of year we're flooded with calls about Christmas, what people can or can't do, what people are objecting to. The public schools have become quite asinine, in my opinion. I mean, they've done away with Christmas programs. You can't use the word Christmas in public schools. You can't have a Christmas tree anymore. You can't have Santa Claus because that's too religious. Angels. You can't have the colors red and green in many schools. That's the Christmas colors.
Are school districts just so afraid to go there? They just stay away entirely.
I think the point
is they're going to get
political
sued.
Correctness. But it really shows recently at Florida Gulf Coast University, They've done away with all Christmas decorations across their campus. They had a Christmas card competition last year. Now they've replaced it with an ugly sweater competition. I've read the articles on the case, and Jewish students and others said that they think it's crazy. It's just a Christmas tree. What the heck are you afraid of? But we've gotten so nervous about mentioning certain words, and one of them is Christmas, or the word Christ and Christmas. But as I point out to people, if you really read the New Testament, it's when Christ is born, the angels say peace, goodwill to all men. It's not just for religious people. There's hope in this time of year, and that's why we have it. It's the Christmas season. That's why people feel good. That's why we have trees and presents. It's a good thing to teach children. The Christ child supposedly came to bring peace on earth. We haven't listened. When Jesus grew up, he talked about blessed are the peacemakers, not the warmongers. This time of year is about not about getting, but receiving. It's about sharing with people. It's about going out in your community. It's about helping the people at the food bank. This year, we're helping out at my own family. We're helping out a family of five children with toys and clothes. We're helping at the food bank. Those are the kind of things you do during Christmas. But why we do that, and this is this crazy thing, is because of the story of baby Jesus. It's historical. Why not teach it in the schools? Why not just tell people? Why not? You don't have to. You can be an atheist and go read the Christmas story in Luke too. I mean, it's a great story. Then you have Jesus growing up and saying, "Blessed are the peacemakers. Go help the poor." Those kind of things. And those kind of neat things we should be teaching. I mean, in the country we live in, I mean, I don't know why we wouldn't be talking about those things in a more positive way. So I think it's just nuts is what I think. Christmas should be magic, yes. And we've taken the magic away. A bunch of squabbling adults. Florida Gulf Coast University replaces the Christmas card competition with an ugly sweater competition because they're afraid someone might be offended. But that's free speech, folks.
John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute is my guest. If you've got a call or a comment or a question, it's 977-1070. John, you also wrote recently about John Lennon. Of course, you're a true Beatles fan is not a strong enough word. You're an expert on the Beatles. What was this about? Why were you writing about Lennon?
Well, today's the 28th anniversary of his...
Is it really?
Killing, yeah.
Oh, no, I had no idea.
Yeah, he was shot around, I think, 10:30. And he died like at 11:40. So, yeah, I wrote about John Lennon. The reason I wrote about him was there's a number of books out on this, especially John Winer's books. He's a professor out of Berkeley who's filed a Freedom of Information Act request and finally got the files that the FBI had on John Lennon. Since 9/11 especially, there's been all these countless stories about people who have been investigated by the government, allowing the government to listen to the emails, the phone calls, all the things that people know about. Investigating people who, one story of a fellow at a gym who was working out and said, "Bush sucks," or something, and a friend called the FBI and actually came and investigated. A lot of stories like that. But that happened to John Lennon. John Lennon became a target of the FBI, Richard Nixon, and J. Edgar Hoover. December 1971, he gave a concert in Ann Arbor, Michigan, on behalf of this guy, John Sinclair, who had gotten 10 years in jail for two marijuana joints. Lennon gave a concert, wrote a great song called John Sinclair, so if you Beatle fans out there know the song. But what he didn't know in the audience was FBI agents taking notes, how many people, what lyrics he was singing. They bugged his phones. Lennon became a real radical. 1971, he released the song Power to the People, where he says, "Get out in the streets and march." So the government was freaking out. What Lennon had learned was that music could move people politically. In November 1969, Pete Seeger led 500,000 people around the Washington Monument in D.C. singing "Give Peace a Chance," Lennon's great peace chant. So he did a lot of radical things, but the weird thing that I noticed looking at the books and looking at the files that reveal is they referred to him as Mr. Lennon, and the term they used was neutralized. It was never defined in the files.
That the FBI wanted to neutralize
Mr. Lennon. Yeah.
Mr. Lennon.
And the night he was shot, December 8th, 1980, the fellow that shot him was a guy named Mark David Chapman, dropped down a combat stance, military style, and shot him and yelled out, "Mr. Lennon," and shot him. he was finally neutralized. Raises some ominous questions. I'm not a conspiratorialist, but it does raise ominous questions. But I think that, you know, the thing about Lenin was he was a great man of peace, understanding, and harmony, and that's why he lives on. I mean, if you turn on this time of year, his Christmas song, you know, War Is Over If You Want It, it's always on the radio. He lives on, but I think the lesson for us is once a bureaucrat focuses on you, no matter who you are, they tried to deport him. He fought a multi-year battle, just trying to stay in the United States. And, you know, those are the things we should fight against. But if they could go after a guy like John Lennon, I mean, they can go after Corey Barefoot or John Whitehead very, very easily. And just thank God we still have the Constitution. And we live in a country that's free, and we can stand up and fight back and be revolutionaries.
We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. Michael's been waiting patiently on the line. Michael, you're on with John. You go right ahead.
Hey, Coy and John. How you guys doing?
Very good.
Good. Hey, I heard today, I don't know a lot of information on it, but that the Oxford New Dictionary has omitted a bunch of words for the same reason that you were just talking about in regards to Christmas. They've pretty much omitted all the words that have to do with Christmas in the dictionary because they don't want there to be that kind of, you know, those kind of definitions. I don't know if you'd heard anything about that, John.
No, but I do. I would believe it. So
I mean, things like Angel and Abby and, you know, Christ and a number of different things like that. Just amazing words that they're literally just taking out of the dictionary so that people don't look them up.
Orwellian. Very exactly. Orwellian, yes.
That's yeah, awesome. So I just didn't know if you'd heard anything about it, so
no,
I thought I'd ask
I hadn't. It. Mike, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, you guys have a great evening.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. Always look forward to hearing from you. John, you were talking about John Lennon being a revolutionary. You also wrote about that recently, one of your commentaries titled, What Kind of Revolutionary Will You Be?
Yeah, I think I'm an advocate that no government official, no organization can do what you can do. And that's the basis of the United States government. We the people, that's how the Constitution starts out. We the people of the United States. So that's the basis of it. You know, we have a tendency to think that Barack Obama is going to come in and save us. That has never occurred. There's never been a president who's ever come in and save us. I think we can, in essence, save ourselves, and that's what we have to do. So I wrote a commentary, and I laid out a number of things I think people can do, basically taking on my book, The Change Manifesto. You know, I just think we need to be very active. Don't be passive. Don't sit back. The first thing I say is get educated, know your rights, know what your, you know, if you don't know what your rights are, you won't know when they're being violated. Constitution takes less than 30 minutes to read. The Bill of Rights is only 462 words. We have all kinds of stuff at the Ruff Institute on those. It makes it very easy for you to read and share with your children. We have a Bill of Rights pamphlet, which is a cartoon, and you've seen that.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
That's for kids to read. But I notice adults have trouble getting through it sometimes. Read it, understand it, know what's going on. Get organized. I mean, get your neighbors together. Get websites going. Develop strategy sessions. As I say, act locally, think nationally. I mean, get a little radical. Why not? I mean, we live in a country where you can do that. Not violently. No. And I say be an irritant, and what I mean by that is, and I've said this a number of times, one fellow at a city planning meeting or a zoning meeting or a city council meeting with a sign is considered a weirdo, three with that same sign is a movement. Politicians understand power is in the people. That's John Lennon's song, Power to the People. Use the media, and there's all kinds of things you can do. It's called What Kind of Revolutionary Would You Be? You should go read it. It's just sort of an 11-point step on what you can do. But it takes you doing it, you know, getting out there. I mean, we forget people like Martin Luther King. You got to have a little fortitude. Get out there. If you don't have the fortitude to go to jail, you know, again, passive resistance, then back someone who does. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do. There are homeless people in this town who complain. And I tell them, hey, get together in a group, four of you, five of you with a sign at the right place is going to get in the newspaper. Politicians don't like bad news, folks. So the revolutionary I'm talking about is the kind Martin Luther King was. You can change things. You can turn things around, but you have to get out and do it.
John Whitehead is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. John, Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
Merry
you so
Christmas.
Much. I want to encourage everybody to buy John's book, The Change Manifesto. It would make a great Christmas gift. Y'all have a terrific night. Thanks for joining me.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.